BFM 89.9, good evening. This is Back to Back, where we dive into an artist's discography and their lives. This week, we're going to be focusing on someone who's known as Ziggy Stardust, the Teen White Duke, Major Tom, among many different personas. We're going to dive into the life of David Bowie. Back on BFM 89.9, Daryl and Ofnir with you this evening.
You just heard Fame, taken from the album Young Americans, which was released in 1975. It's album number 9 from David Bowie. What you get is no tomorrow. Written together with his idol John Lennon, who came up with the title and also sang the background vocals for Fame. He's the high voice part. They also started working on the song when Bowie invited Lennon to the studio, and Lennon played rhythm guitar on a jam session that resulted in this track.
Yeah, I mean, when you have two of the best songwriters of that generation, right, in the same room, definitely magic will happen. And Fame is one of David Bowie's songs to be included into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 500 songs that helped shape rock and roll. This week on the program, myself and Ofnir are diving deep into David Bowie, a man who released a total of 111 singles, averaging about 2 per year during his career. Rolling Stone again ranked him 39 on their list of the 100 greatest artists of all time and 23rd on their list of the best singers of all time.
He was constantly reinventing his persona and sound from the 1960s hippie of Space Oddity through Ziggy Stardust and the Teen White Duke to his later incarnation as a soulful rocker. An artistic chameleon, of course, he absorbed and put out a variety of art. Apart from music, he had a pretty successful career in acting and fashion.
That's right. He also studied Buddhism and mime and released his debut self-titled album in 67 after playing in a host of club bands.
The door, and she'd set up the drinks on the house. She played a good game of darts, and the men slapped her back and never took her out.
So what are we doing, David Bowie, on the program this week? Well, this month marks the 7th year death anniversary. 7 years, pretty crazy. He passed away in 2016. And also, this month, he would have turned 76 years old. David Bowie, of course, a musical and cultural icon. He had many facets to his life with multiple alter egos, like we said. His passing came a mere 2 days after Bowie had released his 27th studio album, Black Star.
Born David Robert Jones on the 8th of January 1947, he would later change his name to Bowie in efforts to avoid confusion with Davy Jones, a member from the band The Monkees. He released his self-titled debut in 1967 and sadly was a victim of lackluster reviews and ended up a commercial failure. Some would blame that it dropped on the same day as Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles, of course, on the 1st of June 1967.
Hard competition,
definitely. While others criticised a lack of direction and his rather psychedelic nursery rhymes that were found throughout the album as one of those many reasons why that debut album failed.
Yeah, so his sophomore album, released a few years later, will also be a self-titled one. Some fans will dub it as David Bowie's true first album and will go on to be known as Space Oddity instead, which will go on to be an example of his different personas, which attracted more than passing interest. Space Oddity is an album that tells an atmospheric tale of an abandoned astronaut, one of his personas, right? Major Tom, orbiting the Earth, and the release became a hit in 69, the year of the first moon landing.
Initially a hit throughout Europe, it took 4 years to break into the United States and was used by the BBC in its coverage of the moon landing. And fun fact, it was also played inside the Tesla that Elon Musk launched into space in 2018.
Yeah, so here's a sample of it. This is David Bowie, taken from Space Oddity, 1967. This is Space Oddity, only here on Back to Back, BFM 89.9.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping through the door, and I'm floating in a most peculiar way, and the stars look very different today. For here am I sitting in a tin can.
Ground control to Major Tom, your circuits sometimes.
About some vision.
David Bowie's 11th album called Low. That was the track Sound and Vision, which was released in the year 1977. That track is also the very first single for that album. It's a song that was written as Bowie's response to retreating from America in an attempt to get away from his addictions.
Yeah, this song has a pretty interesting structure, right, where the vocals only come in after a minute and a half. Although many critics have also called it the tune that's the closest you can get to a conventional pop song when it comes to the Bowie discography. Interestingly, this song turned out to be a big hit in the UK, despite Bowie not doing any promotion for it. Turns out the success was due to the fact that BBC used Sound and Vision as the background music for their programme announcements at that time. This week on Back to Back, we're diving deep into David Bowie, and I guess just to put things out there, I'm not the biggest fan of David Bowie, not gonna lie, but I do give him props as a music veteran and also as a pioneer of what you would call concept albums, right? Lex Dance was actually the first David Bowie song I heard when my dad put it on in the car stereo, and I honestly hated the song as a kid.
Well, I'm not gonna lie as well, I'm not the biggest fan of David Bowie as well, and I actually found out about David Bowie from a t-shirt that my friend was wearing featuring Ziggy Stardust, and I thought, wow, that's a pretty interesting character. It's pretty embarrassing of me, but I haven't really delved into David Bowie's discography until doing this show today. In fact, his latest album, Black Star, is the only one I'm, you know, roughly familiar with, just because Mark Juliana, who happens to be the drummer, is on that album. And I'm going to say it's no mean feat to dive headfirst into his body of work.
Yeah, for sure. And Black Star, we're not going to play any tunes from Black Star, his final album, like Offset, because tomorrow on the program, we're going to be going track by track on Black Star.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. So stay tuned for Track by Track featuring Black Star by David Bowie tomorrow.
However, today on Back to Back, we're going to go a recurring fictional character that David Bowie has created, Major Tom. He appeared in three Bowie hits, Space Oddity, like you just heard, Ashes to Ashes, and also Halo Space Boy. It's a sequel, if you will, to the track you just heard, Space Oddity, two songs ago. On this next one, he regained communication with Ground Control, and he tells them that he's happy, but they deem him nothing but, and I quote, a junkie strung out in heaven's high, hitting an all-time low. David Bowie fans believe this to be his autobiographical piece about his fight against drug abuse and other personal demons.
Yeah, this song had a huge impact on Marilyn Manson, who is kind of cancelled right now. It was the first video he saw on MTV, and according to Marilyn Manson, he said that David Bowie created a radio pop hit that was so unnatural, so different, full of unease and tension. And yet, it had some sexiness to it. It was like I was watching a movie, according to him. Like all of Bowie's other tunes, it's very cinematic. This next one is taken from Scary Monsters, released in the year 1980. Here it is, David Bowie and the tune Ashes to Ashes, right here on Back to Back, BFM 89.9.
Say it's true. They got a message from the Action Man. I'm happy. Hope you're happy too. I've lied.
smoking when nothing is killing. Just pictures of Jeff girls and synthesis. And I ain't got no money and I ain't got no hands. But I'm hoping to kick but the planet is glowing, 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 glowing. Ashes to ash and fuck to fuck it. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's mind, hitting an all-time low. Tom's a junkie,
FM 89.9. Good evening, Daryl, and off me with you on Back to Back, and that was the tune taking us to 1974, David Bowie with Rabble Rabble, taken from his 8th studio album, Diamond Dog.
Yep, this is a tune about a boy who rebels against his parents by wearing makeup and tacky women's clothes. It was a defining song of the glam rock era, definitely, and Bowie actually played guitar on this track after his guitarist Mick Ronson left the band to pursue a solo career. Keith Richards-esque, and that kind of makes sense because he wanted to channel a whole like Rolling Stones kind of vibe when he was making this tune. In fact, David Bowie played almost every instrument on the Diamond Dogs record.
Yes, he did. Dave Thompson of AllMusic, a music portal, described Rabble Rabble as one of David Bowie's most playful numbers and considered it a fitting farewell to the artist's glam rock era and in a way to the entire glam movement which Bowie created. That's something I never knew, that David Bowie actually initiated that whole glam rock era. It's great to know.
Yeah, but at the same time, not surprised as well.
Not surprised indeed. Well, enough of us for a minute on Back to Back. Here is who you hear on A Bit of Culture, the host of the program and also an avid David Bowie fan. Take it away, Cam Rusline.
I first came to David Bowie in 1979 when I was 12 or 13 years old. And prior to that, my musical universe had been just the Beatles. And after that, it's been just the Beatles and Bowie, which, kids, that's all you need. So in 79, I'd heard some Bowie in the background. I don't even know how I knew his songs, but I knew that's David Bowie. And I thought, I like those. So I found myself in a record shop and I was going to make a purchase. And of course, in those days, buying an album was a major expense and you really had to think about it. So in one hand, I had David Bowie's new album, The Lodger, which wasn't selling very well. And in the other hand, I had Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti. Huge, huge hit. And suddenly this girl appeared over my shoulder and I didn't know any girls and I was completely terrified of girls. And she said, "Ooh, Led Zeppelin, they're good." So in an absolute panic, I just threw away the Led Zeppelin and I ran off with the David Bowie. And I often think I'd really like to thank that unknown girl for forcing my hand and making me choose Bowie, because since then I've, through him, discovered landscapes that I've never been to, that don't exist, but I've always lived in. And the very first track that I put on, the first lines were about a fantastic voyage that turns to erosion and we never get old. And I thought, I have no idea what that means, and yet it meant everything.
In the event that this fantastic voyage should turn to erosion,
when he died, I was here in KL. I couldn't tell you exactly where I was. I kind of think that I remember more clearly where I was when John Lennon died, because when David Bowie died, I kind of realized that David Bowie was a human being. I'd always thought of him, I never really thought of him just as a human. John Lennon was so much more of a human star with all those human foibles. Bowie was much more an artwork, an artifice, a paranoid man. was he overly sensitive? Did he have a bad relationship with his mother? I mean, these things are kind of true, but they weren't that at the forefront. He sort of hid those aspects, whereas John Lennon projected it to the world. So when he died, it was very moving. It was very sad, but in a way, his great work had been in the 1970s, and those works remain. And he had achieved the best that he really could have achieved, whereas John Lennon still had more to do. So desperately sad, but at the same time, it sort of reminded me that David Bowie was human. Alter Ego, with a different album, a different year, has become a fairly popular thing now, from Madonna to Lady Gaga. But obviously he created it. Which was my favorite? I would say, in a way, the Thin White Duke, because he just looked so fabulous during that, and he created his mighty album, Station to Station. It was, in a way, I think, his most unhappy period, and he said later that he had no recollection of the making of that album. You know, drugs were involved. But it's such a strange album. He was in self-imposed exile in Los Angeles, but it is in many ways a very European album. He was trying to find a European sound. But then I hear, you know, Ziggy Stardust think, look, this is my favorite album. Then it's Aladdin Sane. And then it's Diamond Dogs. And then it's Low. And, you know, after the Thin White Duke, he didn't really do those alter egos as such. We didn't really get those strong visuals. But the Thin White Duke, there's very little footage of his live shows at that time. But they're really quite spectacular. But, I mean, in their starkness. And you can find on YouTube footage that's been put together, and it just looked amazing. So yeah, Thin White Duke for me. His style of music certainly changed. One of the things that's extraordinary about David Bowie is that he wanted to be, from early on, a solo recording artist at a time when the big successes were bands, collaborations of usually men, young men, but he also wanted to collaborate and be the star. And he managed to pull this off many times, working with people, some people say using them, but he always seemed to get away with it. The likes of Mick Ronson during the Ziggy Stardust period, a great producer and musical arranger and guitarist. Later on, working with Tony Visconti, producer, with Brian Eno, people who would wait by the phone to get a call from David Bowie, but who were in themselves quite big stars. And so these different phases that he went through, the different styles, was him wanting to try different things. And when he did Plastic Soul, the Young Americans, took an enormous amount of courage for a young English guy from South London to think that he could make a soul record in Philadelphia. And he found, amongst others, a young singer called Luther Vandross, who would do the vocal arrangements for the album. And he pulled it off. Yes, in his songs, he did write about aliens, but they were not the kind of aliens of a schlocky horror film. They were reflections of the alien that we feel ourselves to be. And so when he sang about a starman waiting in the sky who'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds, we see that alien, but he's calling to us, the alienated. And we see him, and he wants to speak to us. So, especially in the Ziggy Stardust period, it was a clarion call to those who didn't feel themselves to be part of the mainstream. The irony is that you had a lot of people who would dress the same in order to be an individual when going to a Ziggy Stardust concert. But yeah, he was creating these spaces. I mean, in 5 years, the song 5 years from the album Ziggy Stardust, he's talking about how the world's going to end in 5 years. Now, in that, he's also taking from French or Belgian chansons like Jacques Brel. He's creating these soundscapes that are familiar, but utterly new. And later in his career, he started to write about more mundane and normal things, and then it kind of like lost it. But, you know, in terms of his songwriting, I'm always intrigued by, I know, I never really know how he came about by these songs. But there's a story that Nile Rodgers tells. Nile Rodgers was the producer and collaborator on the album Let's Dance, which was his biggest hit. I didn't like that album. That was the end for me of David Bowie's great period. But he came into Nile Rodgers' room one day playing two chords, very folksy chords. And Bowie said, I think this will be a great hit, big hit, and it's called Let's Dance. And Nile Rodgers said, what, really? Okay, well, how about we... And then Nile Rodgers completely rearranged it, transposed it, speeded it up, slowed it down here and there, and it became Let's Dance, which was his biggest hit. And it's... I'm glad for Bowie that he had that hit. He finally made some money. But it's peculiar because the lyrics to it are, let's dance. I mean, it was as simple as that. It started, and it was sort of like, no coincidence that he went on to do a collaboration with Queen, a band who, when they sang about something, that really was what it was about. If Queen said, fat bottom girls make the rocking world go round, I mean, they really meant just that, and it was so lame. And Bowie started getting into that kind of thinness of messaging. But his great work, which really ended by the time of Scary Monsters, it was... Gosh, if it was about an astronaut, it really wasn't about an astronaut. It was about somebody who was just stuck in a void somewhere. And haven't we all been there? Are we not there now? So at the end of the day, I think the message, if there was a song that really summed it up, was from the final track on Ziggy Stardust, which is Rock and Roll Suicide, where he says, because you're not alone. So if it's about aliens, it's about alienation, but it's also that you're not alone. So that's David Bowie for me.
That was Cam Ruslan on Back to Back. This week, myself, Daryl, and Ofni are diving deep into David Bowie's discography. And he's a man, right, that's not satisfied with being a solo act or doing the same thing over and over. David Bowie was actually in 10 bands throughout his lifetime. The Conrads, The Hype, Tao Jones Index, The King Bees, and more. The Tin Machine, though, is a track we're going to play off next, which is a supergroup formed in 1988 alongside Reeves Gabriels, Tony Fox Sales, and Hunt Sales.
Yeah, together the group recorded two studio albums before dissolving in 1992 when Bowie returned to his solo career. Tin Machine is considered a supergroup influenced by the sounds of Cream, The Pixies, and Jimi Hendrix, and as a result produced a sound that was grittier than most rock bands in the music business at that time.
Yeah.
Here's a taste of that, a tune written about the rise in far-right fascist politics, a movement which Bowie had openly flirted in the previous decade. Check it out, Tin Machine, Under the God, right here on Back to Back, BFM 89.9.
Baseball bat, racism back and roll.
BFM 89.9, Daryl and Off New View on the Back to Back this week on the program. We have been diving deep into David Bowie's discography. And if you'd like to track down a tune or two, do remember that the podcast for tonight's show will be up real soon on our website, www.bfm.my. Okay, up next, it's a song that's covered by many different artists.
I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in this, but my first encounter with this particular track was the Nirvana Unplugged version.
Myself too.
The song tells the story of a man who finds it tough to recognize himself, which reflected Bowie's internal struggle with his identity when he no longer recognized who he was anymore. And that would be a common theme in his songs, which probably explains why he would often create different characters, including Ziggy Stardust, Aladdin Sane, Halloween Jack, the Tin White Duke, and the Blind Prophet.
Yeah, it's not just different characters and different personas, right? But with each of these different characters, he actually created a story behind each of them. And also the sound would slightly change, right, with all these characters. But this next one, though, is an iconic guitar riff, if you ask me. A tune that was also covered by British singer Lulu, which David Bowie played saxophone on her version. But we're going to play the one that's taken from The Man Who Sold the World, 1970, his third studio album. This is David Bowie and The Man Who Sold the World.
We passed up on the stairs. We spoke of what's and when. Although I wasn't there, he said I was his friend, which came as some surprise. I spoke into his eyes. I thought you died alone a long, long time ago. Searched for form and land. For years and years I roamed. I gazed a gazeless stare at all the millions here. We must have died alone a long, long time ago. Seen.
Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seats with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Is there life on Mars? It's on America's tortured brow. Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Blue Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clown. But the film is a sad thing more, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be written again as I ask you to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show. Take a look at the
on Mars by David Bowie, taken from Hunky Dory, one of his more famous albums, I would say, released in 1971, his fourth studio album. Now, the idea for this song came about when he was asked to write the English lyrics to a French song. I'm going to attempt it. It's called Comme on dit habitude.
Well done, well done.
But his version got rejected by the publisher, and as the story goes, fellow singer Paul Anka eventually bought the rights to that song and rewrote it in English, calling it, wait for it, My Way, which would later be the smash hit sung by Frank Sinatra.
Full circle, right? So after hearing My Way, David Bowie was motivated to write Life on Mars, some would say in retaliation to the amazing work that Paul Anka did as compared to his, which really explains why the verse in Life on Mars has the exact same chords with My Way, believe it or not. That's crazy. This week on the program, you're tuned in to Back to Back. We have been diving deep into David Bowie's discography. You have one more tune left for you, but don't forget that tomorrow, myself and Othniel will be going track by track into Black Star, his final studio album.
All right, we'll be leaving you with, I guess, one of his more iconic songs. It's a song that's instantly recognizable. This one can be found on Bowie's 1975 album, Young Americans, and a Chic founder, Nile Rodgers, auditioned to play guitar in Bowie's band a few years before this, but he didn't get the part. But Rodgers later produced this biggest selling album of Bowie's career, and we're talking about 1983's Let's Dance. The track also features a guitar solo by the late great blues musician Stevie Ray Vaughan, which I did not know until today.
That's crazy. And even though this song sounds like it's all about dancing, now Rodgers said that it's actually about the dance that people do in life, conceptual dance of not being honest.
Wow.
Pretty deep stuff, if you ask me, and a nice note to leave you on Back to Back this evening. So here it is. This is David Bowie, our last track on Back to Back with Let's Dance. Enjoy this and join us again next week, only here on BFM 89.9.